Hi, I'm Richard Karn, and you may have seen me on TV talking about the world's number one expandable garden hose. Well, the brand new Pocket Hose Copperhead with Pocket Pivot is here, and it's a total game changer. Old-fashioned hoses get kinks and creases at the spigot, but the Copperhead's Pocket Pivot swivels 360 degrees for full water flow and freedom to water with ease all around your home. When you're all done, this rust-proof anti-burst hose shrinks back down to pocket size for effortless handling and tidy storage. Plus, your super light and ultra-durable pocket hose Copperhead is backed with a 10-year warranty. What could be better than that? I'll tell you what, an exciting radio-exclusive offer just for you. For a limited time, you can get a free pocket pivot and their 10-pattern sprayer with the purchase of any size Copperhead hose. Just text WATER to 64000. That's WATER to 64000 for your two free gifts with purchase. W-A-T-E-R to 64000.
By texting 64000, you agree to receive recurring automated marketing messages from Pocket Hose. Message and data rates may apply. No purchase required. Terms apply. Available at pockethose.com/terms.
Prescription products require completion of an online medication consultation with an independent healthcare provider through the LifeMD platform and are only available if prescribed. Subscription required. Individual results may vary. Additional restrictions apply at LifeMD.com. Read all warnings before using GLP-1s. Side effects may include a risk of thyroid C-cell tumors. Do not use GLP-1s if you or your family have a history of thyroid cancer.
Confused on where to start with weight loss medication? See the lowest prices available with or without insurance for Wegovy, Zepbound, and more at TryLifeMD.com. 95% of LifeMD patients said starting their weight loss journey was simple. Listen to Tara's story after losing 42 pounds.
You just take your shot. It doesn't feel like you're on a diet. What I wasn't expecting it to do was to shut off the food noise. I had gone from 237 to 195. This was life-altering, and if I can do it, I feel like anybody can do it.
Get your free insurance benefits check in minutes right now at TryLifeMD.com. Nearly 96% of patients said they would recommend the LifeMD program to anyone who wants to lose weight. Get started right now at TryLifeMD.com. That's TryLifeMD.com.
Understand why the European allies and our NATO allies are so thankful that you are no longer president, and that we understand the importance of the greatest military alliance the world has ever known, which is NATO, and what we have done to preserve the ability of Zelensky and the Ukrainians to fight for their independence. Otherwise, Putin would be sitting in Kyiv with his eyes on the rest of Europe, starting with Poland. And why don't you tell the 800,000 Polish Americans right here in Pennsylvania how quickly you would give up for the sake of favor and what you think is a friendship with what is known to be a dictator who would eat you for lunch.
Hello and welcome to the Bulwark Podcast. I'm your host, Tim Miller. And speaking of getting eaten for lunch, how about that last night? Donald Trump, boy, he was on the menu, so to speak, for Kamala Harris. And I'm delighted to be here today with my old pal, S.E. Cup, CNN contributor, Battleground America series. She's doing for Fox stations across the country. And the last time we were together, boy, the vibes are very different. How you doing, SE?
Very different vibes. I'm good. How are you?
I couldn't be better. I was living the dream
good,
last
Tim?
Night. I was living the dream last night in the spin room, just going up to all my old friends, asking them how they're doing, asking them if they're in their fifis, trying to make them spin, pretending like I was a journalist next to all the other journalists to ask them to give me their best spin.
Right.
Oh boy, it was enjoyable. It's not about me though. It's about the country. It's about Kamala Harris. So let's just kind of do this conversation style like we're a couple of pals having coffee, just enjoying ourselves. So what?
Aren't we?
That's what we're doing.
Aren't we just a couple pals
having
coffee?
Like we're just hanging out at the coffee shop, chatting about what happened last night. So
we're both in Philly, right?
We are both in Philly. We should have done this
like
together.
We're just hanging out, yeah.
Okay. Virtually, this is Gen Z counts this as being together. Actually, what? So what'd you think? What was your top line? Give it to me.
I feel like Kamala Harris must be feeling what Putin and Kim Jong-un feel, which is like, I can't believe this guy fell for it. Like, I can't believe how easily manipulated this guy was. She laid out trap after trap after trap. These weren't like well-concealed traps. These were pretty obvious traps, and he walked into every single one, like, giddily. I mean, she's a prosecutor, but she's not Houdini. She didn't, like, there was no magic. She laid a trap. He walked right into it, like, laughing and screaming. and like happily. I think even for me, having covered him so long, somewhat surprising to see just how easily manipulated he was by her. And I think if you're a swing state voter who is undecided and you don't really love either of these people, you just watch that thinking, man, he's a sucker. What a sucker.
And a loser, you might say. What a sucker and a loser. The bait element of this, because I was skeptical, because they said this before the Biden debate, right? That he was going to try to bait him. And they were saying that. Those leaks were coming out of prep. And I was like, is that really true? Is that just a head game? I could kind of see her focusing on her own message, her own story. Is she really going to do it? And then it's this immigration section. The whole debate, you know, was lost. I mean, he didn't win a single point in any part of the whole debate. But like the key segment of the debate was where you go from immigration into abortion, right? In the immigration section, this topic that should be very friendly for him comes up. And the question goes to her first. And she gives her answer, which is a fair substantive answer about how Donald Trump killed that bill. It aligns a little bit of what happened before that. But you know, it was a fair point. And what she wants to do is going forward. Mm-hmm. And then she ends it with like a total non sequitur about his crowd size. Like, she's still kind of nervous.
That's what I mean. These are not carefully planted traps. Yes.
And she doesn't even really execute it that well. Like as the debate goes on, she gets better and better at this. But it's kind of like a rambling mess a little bit about how his crowd's
You know what it reminded me of? You know, in Zoolander? Yeah. Right? They've got a subliminal, like a song that they just play to like trick Derek Zoolander into going after the prime minister of Malaysia. Yes. It's not careful. It's not clever. It's literally Pavlovian. It's like she does a policy thing and then she'd be like, crowd size. And he spins. Yeah. He goes nuts. He becomes, you know, Zoolander. It was so, it would be funny if the consequences weren't so high. But like I said, these were obvious traps. And anyone with any self-control or foresight about what was trying to happen here could easily have avoided them, but he has no self-control.
Correct. So yeah, during what should be the best part for him.
Yeah, the best part, right?
You know, he goes off on defending his crowd. So people don't even show up to her rallies. What are you talking about? And then he's spiraling so much that takes him into the dog section. Right. So it's in the question where she is triggering him over his, you know, how the people leave, they get bored by him. But then he's like, and then it's in Springfield and people are eating dogs. They're eating cats. They're eating pets. Of all kinds, all the pets are getting eaten by these immigrants in Ohio. It's like, if you are not somebody that is so online, like you know, if you are not just super attuned to MAGA media or to Twitter,
Reddit,
or whatever,
4chan,
regular viewers are like, you know, I'm like, thinking about my father. Like, what the fuck is he talking about? Who's eating dogs?
Yeah.
And then David Muir has to correct him and be like, actually, it's not true. The city manager says it's not true. There was one alleged cat incident 170 miles away, and it wasn't even an immigrant who allegedly had skinned a cat. And it was, and then Trump's like, but I heard about it on TV.
Right.
Yeah, Muir's like, that's not right. I mean, this is, we have facts here. And it just, the thing spirals from there.
But my question to you is, do you think his campaign said, don't bring up the dogs and cats? Don't do it. And he couldn't help himself? Or do you think they planned, like, you can bring up the dogs and cats. Bring up the dogs and cats, but wait for, like, the right time to bring up the dogs and cats because, you know, the dogs and cats things will scare people. What do you think happened? Did he go off page there or did he do it but just sort of ham-fistedly?
I think he did it ham-fistedly, but here's what I really think about the prep. And you've been in some prep sessions, so we can talk about this. Yeah. He didn't prep. Uh-huh. Right? Like, they weren't joking, right? Like, they kind of prepped. You know, Mark Caputo, my colleague, has reported on this. I was talking to him this morning, and it's like, they kind of prepped. You know, they're like, Gates is in prep. But it's like, was he really? Like, there were times where Gates wasn't really there, and then he was. And
I guess Tulsi Gabbard.
And Trump doesn't like to get told things. Yeah. He doesn't like. And the cat thing is new. It's fresh in his mind. Yes. You know, it's like, he's this person. It's like the last thing that someone said to him. He'll blurt. You know, so that was going around the day before, because J.D. Vance actually laid this trap for him. Like, this shouldn't have even come up. But J.D. just, like, tweeting the day before about how this is his home state of Ohio, and there's this epidemic of Haitian migrant cat eating. Yes. And so, but I just think if you look at that answer and then you get to the abortion answer, the contrast on the abortion answer. It's like Trump's whining this morning on Fox. He's like, Kamala knew the questions. It's like, no, Kamala knew the topics. Kamala right. prepped. And like, so you get to the abortion section and you have Trump's answer, which we can't even play the audio of because it's just gobbledygook. It's like, I love the Supreme Court and it was great, but it also isn't that good. And I care about the exceptions and also the states. And it's like, he didn't even prep the answer on his hardest question. And then you get to Kamala's answer. I want to play one bit from that.
And one does not have to abandon their faith or deeply held beliefs to agree. The government and Donald Trump certainly should not be telling a woman what to do with her body. I have talked with women around our country. You want to talk about this is what people wanted? Pregnant women who want to carry a pregnancy to term, suffering from a miscarriage, being denied care in an emergency room because the healthcare providers are afraid they might go to jail, and she's bleeding out in a car in the parking lot. She didn't want that. Her husband didn't want that. A 12 or 13-year-old survivor of incest being forced to carry a pregnancy to term. They don't want that. And I pledge to you, when Congress passes a bill to put back in place the protections of Roe v. Wade, as President of the United States, I will proudly sign it into law.
That answer was prepped. That was a heat-seeking missile aimed at pro-life swing voters that don't like Donald Trump, or, you know, people that were for some types of restriction.
Weapons grade. It was a weapons grade answer, and she had clearly planned it. Yes. But what was so great about it was, A, she delivered those lines very emotionally and passionately. So it, I think, connected with real people. And she said everything short of, and you did this. What she was saying was, we don't want this. Women don't want this. You know, girls who've been raped, they don't want this. And you did this. She looked at him as she sort of laid out the consequences of that Supreme Court decision, and she tied it directly to him. And we know this puts him in a pretzel because he loves to take credit for it, but he's also trying to distance himself. So he had nothing. He had nothing for that, I think, very surgical and creatively crafted answer that did all the things, checked all the boxes: emotional, personal, passionate, political, policy, and she made it about him. It was great.
You're looking at him. And if you're
looking at him,
if you're a Trump hater and she says that line of like, the government shouldn't be telling these women what, and certainly Donald Trump shouldn't be telling them. And you just like, just the subtext, she doesn't have to be like the grabbing by the pussy guy and the E. Jean Carroll. But like, that's all right there. Not this man is not going to tell you what to do.
Only a woman could deliver it like that. Only a woman could deliver it like that. Anyone could say it about him, of course. But coming from a woman, I thought it was probably the moment of the night. And that's obviously a winning issue for her. So I don't think she had to work that hard at landing the plane, but it was a really good landing. And he didn't take the moments that would have been good for him. He got so distracted that he didn't make the most of the issues that inure to his benefit. And that was his big mistake.
Hi, I'm Richard Karn. And you may have seen me on TV talking about the world's number one expandable garden hose. Well, the brand new Pocket Hose Copperhead with Pocket Pivot is here, and it's a total game changer. Old-fashioned hoses get kinks and creases at the spigot, but the Copperhead's Pocket Pivot swivels 360 degrees for full water flow and freedom to water with ease all around your home. When you're all done, this rust-proof anti-burst hose shrinks back down to pocket size for effortless handling and tidy storage. Plus, your super light and ultra-durable pocket hose Copperhead is backed with a 10-year warranty. What could be better than that? I'll tell you what, an exciting radio exclusive offer just for you. For a limited time, you can get a free pocket pivot and their 10-pattern sprayer with the purchase of any size Copperhead hose. Just text WATER to 64000. That's WATER to 64000 for your two free gifts with purchase. W-A-T-E-R to 64000.
By texting 64000, you agree to receive recurring automated marketing messages from Pocket Hose. Message and data rates may apply. No purchase required. Terms apply. Available at pockethose.com/terms.
Hi, I'm Richard Karn, and you may have seen me on TV talking about the world's number one expandable garden hose. Well, the brand new Pocket Hose Copperhead with Pocket Pivot is here, and it's a total game changer. Old-fashioned hoses get kinks and creases at the spigot, but the Copperhead's Pocket Pivot swivels 360 degrees for full water flow and freedom to water with ease all around your home. When you're all done, this rust-proof anti-burst hose shrinks back down to pocket size for effortless handling and tidy storage. Plus, your super light and ultra durable pocket hose copperhead is backed with a 10-year warranty. What could be better than that? I'll tell you what, an exciting radio exclusive offer just for you. For a limited time, you can get a free pocket pivot and their 10-pattern sprayer with the purchase of any size copperhead hose. Just text WATER to 64000. That's WATER to 64000 for your two free gifts with purchase. W-A-T-E-R to 64000.
By texting 64000, you agree to receive recurring automated marketing messages from Pocket Host. Message and data rates may apply. No purchase required. Terms apply. Available at pockethost.com/terms.
So this all ties the prep with the body language. So let's talk about both. Because I had Simone on yesterday. And she was talking about how for a woman candidate, particularly a woman of color, going against Trump, and what we saw in the first debate where the body language was so bad for Biden. You know, it was just like for a variety of reasons. He's a TV guy. The prep is twofold. Like, you know, like I didn't really prep. Maybe I should have prep Jeb's facial reactions. You know, like we didn't like work on that really. You know, it was substance. It was style.
Yeah,
you could tell that she was both prepped on the substance and on debating. Just also on the way that she carried herself. It begins from the moment of walking up to shake his hand.
Yeah.
All the way through how she looked and how he didn't look at her. So talk about that.
And her faces while he was speaking.
Yeah.
Were careful. Look, I'm a woman of many faces. Lots of times cannot control what happens right here. Mm-hmm. And there's plenty of evidence of that on TV.
Mm-hmm. I know about that.
Yeah, you do. You do. But we also know how to make an effective face that says everything. And I think she did intentionally think about how to look when he said things that were meant to bait her. She wasn't going to fall for the bait, but her response to the bait was going to be these faces. And her faces were both puzzled, amused sometimes, yeah. Almost like a grandma or an auntie looking sort of askew at someone saying something stupid. Just, this is stupid, but like, oh, poor thing. They were careful. They weren't distracting, importantly, because we remember some debate moments like Al Gore, whose reactions were like distracting throughout a debate, whether he was like humping or, you know, huffing and puffing. They weren't distracting. They were meant to, I think, signal to like everyone, do you hear what I'm hearing? This is fucking crazy shit. This is crazy. And if you're a normal person like me, you are looking at this thinking, what? I think that's what she was channeling. Like, don't take this like seriously. It is not serious. It is absurd. And my face will reflect how absurd it is.
And it was also a show of dominance over him, right? Like, I'm not scared of you. I walked straight up. I shaked his hand.
Not.
I looked him in the eye. Yeah. I went back to my podium. When you talk, I'm going to look at you and sometimes make some bemused faces. When she was talking, he couldn't look at her.
Straight
he
ahead.
Was seething. Uh-huh. Uh-huh. See, his body language, his hunched shoulders, mm-hmm. his face paint was multicolored for some reason last night.
Yeah.
It was like dripping a little bit and like it was just coming in different, you know, splotchy in his mouth. But the thing that I just could not get over is he would not look at her. And well, in the post game, you might have heard me ask him about that. Let's listen.
Now she wants to do another one because she got beaten tonight, but I don't know.
Why wouldn't you look at her?
The polls are indicating that we got 90%, 60%. 72%, 71%, and 89%.
Where are you getting these numbers from?
What?
Where are you getting these numbers from? I love that.
My friend
sent it to me. I was live on Fox going, why would you look at her? Why would you look at her? But I mean, A, the fact that he's in the spin room at the end is a sign of just
delusion.
Total failure and delusion. You know, I mean, they had nothing. Like this is the other thing. You've, you know, been supporting candidates at bad debate nights. I've worked for candidates at bad debate nights.
Yeah.
There's something you grab onto. You're like, oh, we had a good moment on this. We won on points. They had nothing. He was out there just rambling and they're just complaining about the moderators.
Mm-hmm.
Like, am I too coconut pilled right now? Am I too ebullient? What?
No, I mean, they're going to blame the moderators. They're going to blame the media. Like you said, they're gonna suggest she got the questions or something. It was rigged. They'll do that. And that might work with his base. It absolutely will not work with the undecided swing state voters who are going to decide this election. They've told us over and over again. Here at Battleground, we pull them all the time in the swing states. They say they are not here for the distractions. They are not here for the personal attacks. They actually have substantive problems and questions. They want answers. So I don't think any of that works with the people that he needs. That was his job last night, to speak to undecided swing state voters. And on the economy and immigration, he has the issues that benefit him, but he couldn't do it. And she had the same job too, to speak to those voters. And I thought, interestingly, if you take Trump out of it, her policy answers, I think, were speaking to moderates and undecideds and swing state voters. She wasn't playing to the base. She knows what the game last night was about. She's got the base. She's brought most of the base back after Biden lost a lot of the base. She needs those swing state voters. That's why she was saying, I'm not banning fracking. I'm not going to do this. I'm going to look like the normal, sane candidate here. Well, I'll allow him to look crazy. And it worked. It worked perfectly.
She repeats, we're going to have the most lethal military.
Yeah.
The one time when she was the most adamant about getting in another response was when she was like, no, that's not true. Mm-hmm. About, I'm not going to ban fracking. I'm not going to defund the police. Yeah. I forget the third thing that he said was, like, she was adamant, like trying to get time from the moderators to just be crystal clear about the pivot to the center.
Right.
And, you know, on the policies, the, like, the, what are the policies she was talking about? Opportunity economy, mm-hmm. building houses. You know, it's this broad base. And there's some populist stuff in there too, like some free money parts in there, but it was mostly middle of the road stuff. He was so bad on the key points that it's actually kind of secondary how bad he was on the typical Trumpy things. For example, they finally get to January 6th, like an hour into the debate. And let's play one clip from it that really stood out to me when he was asked about January 6th.
Is there anything you regret about what you did on that day?
You just said a thing that isn't covered peacefully and patriotically, I said during my speech, not later on. Peacefully and patriotically. And nobody on the other side was killed. Ashley Babbitt was shot by an out-of-control police officer that should have never, ever shot her. It's a disgrace. But we didn't do this group of people that have been treated so badly.
Press 15 seconds back if you guys missed that. Nobody on the other side was killed. Mm. We didn't.
Like police.
Yeah, we didn't. And then he catches himself saying we. We didn't. Mm-hmm. So it's like the rioters are we. The other side is the police getting attacked. That's an astonishingly horrific answer.
It is. And if there were a debate just about that, what you would have gone in and said in response was, how can you say I told them to go in peacefully and patriotically? And then when they didn't, you want to pardon them. That's contradictory. Either you didn't tell them to go in violently, and so you're mad that they did, because they clearly did, or you wanted them to go in violently, and so that now you want to pardon them. You can't have both ways, but this debate didn't get that granular, but he can't answer coherently and consistently on that. It's very similar to his abortion answers. He's constantly trying to take credit for carving out this part that he thinks works for his base while carving away the part he knows that turns everyone else off, but he gets it mixed up in his head all the time. And he can't help himself for taking credit for the whole thing. And then he has to distance himself and back out like a chunk of it. It's the same game over and over and over again. It was a terrible answer. I will just say the undecided swing state voters we're talking to about who they're going to vote for, they don't care about January 6th.
I know. Yep. The Bulwark listeners do.
Just saying. I'm just saying.
Hi, I'm Richard Karn. And you may have seen me on TV talking about the world's number one expandable garden hose. Well, the brand new Pocket Hose Copperhead with Pocket Pivot is here, and it's a total game changer. Old-fashioned hoses get kinks and creases at the spigot, but the Copperhead's Pocket Pivot swivels 360 degrees for full water flow and freedom to water with ease all around your home. When you're all done, this rust-proof anti-burst hose shrinks back down to pocket size for effortless handling and tidy storage. Plus, your super light and ultra-durable pocket hose Copperhead is backed with a 10-year warranty. What could be better than that? I'll tell you what, an exciting radio-exclusive offer just for you. For a limited time, you can get a free pocket pivot and their 10-pattern sprayer with the purchase of any size Copperhead hose. Just text WATER to 64000. That's WATER to 64000 for your two free gifts with purchase. W-A-T-E-R to 64000.
By texting 64000, you agree to receive recurring automated marketing messages from Pocket Hosts. Message and data rates may apply. No purchase required. Terms apply. Available at pockethosts.com/terms.
So one thing that you guys might be talking to that I think they might care about is the divisive thing.
Yeah.
There was only one moment where I was a little bit like, uh-oh, where's she going with this? And it was on the race question. He gets asked about how she turned black or whatever. And he says it like that, black. He can't say black. Black.
Black.
And mm-hmm. he gives this horrific answer mm-hmm. where he looks so weak and small. And he's just kind of like, well, I don't really care. Do you care? You didn't. And then they're like, well, you brought it up. And he's like, I don't, you know, he has nothing. Like, you'd think he at least would have been prepared to be like, my whole point is she's a phony.
Uh-huh.
That's all he had to say.
That's all
my whole point is
say.
That she's a phony. Yeah. Like, she's panderer and a phony. That's all I was trying to say. It wasn't about Ray. And then she goes into like a lengthy, again, prepared response that goes back to the apartment discrimination against blacks, the Central Park Five, birtherism. She's going in there. And that's separate from her, what she's been doing. She hasn't been talking about race that much. But then she kind of ties it together by just being like, that's not what the American people want, right?
No.
They don't want, you know, it wasn't like a woe is me, he's so racist thing. It was like a, stop fucking doing this. Stop dividing us. And so I do wonder, like, how do you think that landed with the types of voters that you're talking to?
Well, we know. Going back 40 and 50 years, we've talked to black voters in swing states who are undecided. They don't care.
Yeah.
They don't care about Central Park Five. They don't, it's not relevant to their life today.
Yeah.
I'm not saying they don't care ecumenically.
Yeah, sure, of course.
But in terms of who they're voting for, it's just not relevant. So it was good that she got through that and then tied it back to now and this bigger picture of his divisiveness, because they do care about that. They're not here for the anger, the grievance, the complaining, the rigged election, the backwards looking. They're not here for that. Yeah. They don't want it anymore. But I wouldn't spend too much time walking back to the birtherism. It's not what's bothering these voters right now.
But she does pivot into like the turning the page thing, which she hit pretty well. Again, this is another just total failure, just like basic debate prep for him, is you go in and immediately and try to tie her to Biden.
Easy to do. She is still the vice president.
Exactly. And he doesn't do it.
No.
And then finally towards the very end, she's like, sorry, I don't know if you noticed, but I'm not Joe Biden. And because it's so late in the debate, it ends up being kind of like a winning line, right? Like that's a losing line in the first 7 minutes where it's like a good line. But then if you keep repeating it, it's like, you might think you're not Joe Biden, but you guys did this and you guys did that, but he couldn't do that. And I think that sort of the racist stuff kind of gets wrapped up into this, like, people are sick of these old fucking guys and they're sick of the white, you know, like, is there a potential strand there for her in kind of this, the culture war topic, that she's just trying to move people past it?
Yeah. I mean, God, there were so many things he could have done.
Yeah. Right.
Tying her to Biden, catching her on her flip-flops. That's tough to do because he's also flip-flop, but he could still go after it. And he could go where media, frankly, hasn't gone. Like, why has no one asked her? She and Walz have not been forced to answer a question. For example, in Minnesota, Tim Walz, there are no weak restrictions on abortion. That is wildly unpopular. Wherever you stand on that issue, it is outside the mainstream of where a majority of Americans are. Is that your policy, Kamala Harris? Do you want America to look more like Minnesota, Kamala Harris? I mean, these are he could have not only tied her to Biden, but tied her to Walz and made her answer for some of this. Why'd you pick him? He's super extreme. I mean, he could have done all kinds of things that made this not just about this one woman and his issues with her, but he didn't, because he didn't prep.
For California broadly, the failures of California, the crime and the cost of living. I'm not here to give coaching advice to Donald Trump, but like, there are a million things you could do.
Anyone could have looked at the dynamic here, the issues at play, the issues that matter to Americans, and crafted out a clear course of action for him that really would have presented a challenge for Kamala Harris. They didn't do any of that. He didn't prep it, or he forgot about it, or he couldn't control where he took it. So for her, I think she allows him to do the culture war stuff because it makes him look crazy. I don't think she really even has to dabble in it that much because he's going to do it for her, and he's going to lose it and win it for her.
I mean, he's in like this hermetically sealed world of crazy. It isn't just the dog thing. He's like Viktor Orban. Viktor Orban, they call him a strongman. It's like Laura Ingraham and Sean Hannity debunked the Charlottesville hoax. And like, he's like name dropping these random, like, he's very deep in his own navel and all this kind of cultural stuff and all like the art, the story of Trump and the Game of Thrones of it all that like most people just don't care about.
Well, I'm wondering, and listen, let's say it again. This race is tight. I expect it will remain tight. But I don't think he lost the election because of this debate. But I read yesterday or Monday, too, that Republicans are worried he is not investing. The campaign is not investing enough in swing state voter turnout.
Because of the fraud. They're focused on the lawyers and the fraud. Literally, that's why. Yeah.
100%. They pulled out of this at the RNC and directed their efforts, money, resources to voter fraud. But turning the vote out has never been his strong suit. It's never been interesting to him. Remember in midterms when he was president, he would go out and say, these midterms aren't as important as my elections. Well, they are to every down ballot Republican, right? He doesn't get it. He doesn't care. He doesn't care about widening the tent and bringing in new voters, which he will need. I don't know if Chris LaCivita and Susie Wiles care. They're smart. I'm sure they do. But I'm just wondering if everyone around him said he doesn't care and we're never going to get him to care enough to control himself, to speak to these undecided swing state voters the way they want to be spoken to. So just forget it. Let's just forget it and work on turning out everyone we already have and their persuadable friends. Because that's what it's sounding more and more like he's doing.
So just like think about that in the biggest picture element of this. You're spending time with these, with the voters that matter. This was a tight race going in. You know, I just did a sports talk thing right before this, you know, and like the first question for like non-politicos is like, are there any undecideds out there? Like, does this even matter? Is this just a show for you political guys? And that's like a legit question, right? Like, I am of the view that, yeah, no, that matters. Like, there's a significant, it's small, but a significant number of people that are gettable, but you're out there talking to these people. Like, what did you think? Like, what extent does it matter?
Well, just by the numbers, undecideds represent about 18% of American registered voters. That's not a small number. Even if you don't like believe all of them.
Sure. Honestly, even if you only believe half of them.
Right.
Even if 9% is very significant.
Electorally significant. In Pennsylvania, it's about 3%. That's a lot of voters.
Yeah.
And as we know, Pennsylvania's a big prize, 19 electoral votes.
The undecideds, 3%.
Yeah, the undecideds in Pennsylvania represent 3% of registered voters, okay? So that's a lot of voters. We go out in the streets in Wisconsin and North Carolina, Nevada, Arizona, Georgia, Michigan. We go out into the streets. We meet these voters. We've done focus groups with these voters. They're saying we're undecided because we don't like either of these people. And we know Kamala Harris a little less. We're waiting to see more. And a lot of them pegged their sort of decision deadline to the debate last night. They thought the debate last night was going to make their decision. If we believe that, and we extrapolate that that's how a lot of undecided voters were going into this night last night, that this was going to help them decide, I think that's very bad news for Donald Trump. It's very good news for Kamala Harris. Now, there's like 2 months left. Lots could happen, but if we're just taking them at their word and what they're telling us, and we're going to go out and talk to more of them post-debate, certainly, so we'll know more, then this is significant. And the sports guys, you know, should handicap this, knowing that that is significant.
It's just looking just at the Kamala of it, then, if that was really a decision point, as much as we're like talking about Trump's crazy. To me, like expectations beating. Like by a wide margin. Like I thought she was being nervous. Like let's just be honest. Like she does the word salad stuff sometimes herself. Like these circular sentences where like you can tell she doesn't know what she's going to say. Kind of, and she's like blabbing. Yes. She didn't do a lot of that. There wasn't visible nerve. A little bit maybe the first 8 minutes maybe, but like once she got going, there was not visible nerves. And then to me also on the foreign policy stuff, people don't vote on foreign policy, but they wanted her to pass this bar of believability. And she was like, fucking Ukraine, Munich Security Conference, Abrams tanks. I mean, she's like dropping names of missiles and tanks. You know what I mean? Like she's, and I'm like, oh, like she was, so I think that she felt like that she passed that bar for those folks. But I don't, what do you think?
Yeah, I think the bar, I wouldn't say the bar was low for her, but it she definitely beat it.
Yeah.
Wherever it was, she beat it because she does do word salad. She can also get, I'll remind you of the Lester Holt interview, testy and defensive.
Yeah.
And almost like I'm too good to answer this question, or why are you even asking this question about the border?
Dismissive.
Please.
Yeah.
Dismissive, condescending. I didn't see any of that. I think whoever's around her, and we probably know the folks, gave her very specific good advice.
Yeah.
And maybe this even came in, you know, inherently from her, just knowing what she needed to do, which was don't word salad.
Yeah.
Don't be dismissive of issues that matter to voters. Like, don't go out and say there's no crime. Right. Don't go out and say the economy is great. Don't do that. And try not to get emotionally rattled by Trump. She did none of those things. And like we said earlier, she did policy. She did substance. I would have liked a little more, but that's always me. She did the foreign policy check. She did.
Yeah.
And then, like we said, and then she just dropped this little like bait, like crowd size, and just let him go off on it. Like, right. She'd end the policy thing with like,
your inheritance. Like, are we we're talking about the size of his inheritance.
And we didn't all inherit billions of dollars. Boom. And like out of nowhere, but he's so dumb and so
impulsive,
he was just like a dog with I got the bone. Let's go with it. I couldn't believe how easy it was. Truly, truly how easy it was to manipulate him.
Great prep. Dave Plouffe was in there. The Obama guys they brought in. Karen Dunn, we should mention. They obviously, all the credit goes to Kamala, but this was a professionally executed debate.
Yes, it was.
And impressive. And it's a lot. And it looks hard, but I promise y'all, it's harder than it looks. I've been in those rooms. All right, last thing.
Yeah. Okay.
Tay-Tay.
Say it again.
Tay-Tay. Oh. Taylor Swift.
Yeah.
Last night, she posts on Instagram endorsing Kamala.
Yeah.
I noticed one quick notice I should also mention. Caitlin Clark gave that a like. Saw a Caitlin Clark like.
Okay.
There's a lot of wish casting out there in Cope and MAGA world that Caitlin's one of them. I don't really see it.
Okay.
Does it matter? Is it just fun?
No.
Doesn't matter. Not
even celebrity endorsements don't matter. Like, never. And she has endorsed before. She's done it before. It didn't matter. Yeah. No. And listen, all the caveats.
Everything matters.
This election's crazy. This election's atypical. This election's different. It's unprecedented. Anything could happen. Every vote counts. All the things. But no. Celebrity endorsements just generally don't move people.
Okay. Last. Is God good enough for us to get another one of these? Will Trump do it? He's saying this morning he doesn't think he wants to.
Again, it's really hard for him to take that bait too. And after this, he will need another event. He will need another inflection point to try and, I think, regain some momentum. A debate is kind of conceivably the only manufactured thing you could do to create that opportunity, but he'd have to be a completely different person to help himself in the next debate. And I don't know that he can be that.
So does he not even show? Does he show? Does he do it?
I don't know.
I don't know either. I would have said yes, he does do it, but he looked like a beaten puppy this morning on Fox and News.
He did.
Fox and Friends, so I don't know.
He might just take the L and be like, it was rigged.
I was like, the people wanted you back. And I was like, the last time we were together was after the RNC convention. And it was, you know, the different energy in the world there.
Yeah.
Joe Biden was still the race. So things have changed. And, you know, we are now in the Coconut Grove. And I'm happy to have you back. Thank you for doing this. That's SC Cup. Stick around. I got a few more things for y'all on the other side. And isn't SE great? You just know she's giving you real talk too. If you don't believe she's giving real talk, go back and listen to our last time together when things were looking a little different. Guys, so we have like wall-to-wall content for you. Just wanted to make sure you weren't missing anything. Over on YouTube, there was a live stream last night. We've pushed it up. There's a post-game analysis that I popped onto before I went over to the spin room. I want to talk to you about the spin room real quick. And then also it's Wednesday, so we've got the next level, which we're going to be going real long on and focusing on the debate, of course, but also on where we're kind of going from here and forward-looking campaign stuff. The spin room, guys, I wrote for The Bulwark this morning, which you should go check out at thebulwark.com, about Inside Trump's Spin Room from Hell. And I got to tell you, I was having the time of my life, people. Nobody except Doug Emhoff was having more fun than me last night. Let me tell you that. You know, I left the Bulwark live stream, and immediately upon returning to, before I even get into the spin room, outside the magnetometers, there's only two people standing out there, Lindsey Graham and his flack. And for those who've read my book or been longtime podcast listeners, you know that me and Lindsay knew each other pretty well. I mean, Lindsay was a big Jeb supporter. We were on the road together a lot. He used to call me at night. We get drunk together a couple times. I know y'all are thinking, don't get the bad thoughts out of your head. All right. Nothing like that. You know, no signs of that. There's plenty of bad Lindsey Graham things to talk about without you going there. I know where your head was, listener. So he recognized me immediately, of course. And I just went in on him. Like, and I'm just like, all right, this is your moment. After this night, we were on the same page. Back in 2016, we used to talk about how awful he was. Let's go. You're welcome. The water's warm. Come on back. Come on the Board podcast. We can talk about your conversion back. And he got hot. Immediately hot. Red-faced. Shame on you. You should be ashamed, he's saying to me. I'm like, I should be ashamed. who should be ashamed here? Anyway, it goes on and on, going round and round, all the things you'd expect. Him talking about how great the Trump years were, minus 2020. Me talking about how he was running for his life like a scared little baby from the Donald Trump supporters in January 6th. And so maybe it didn't end as well as he remembers. And then finally, because he can't help himself, he's a politician. Even at the end of a pretty heated exchange, he wanted to win me over. Or he wanted to demonstrate we were still pals, or he wanted to demonstrate, you know, we could still ride in the golf cart together if the winds of politics ever change. And so he gives me a fist bump and he leans in and he's like, man, he goes, I'll say this, he was unprepared and that debate team should be fired. It was a disaster. I was like, oh, thanks for that, Lindsay. Turned around, fired that bad boy off on Twitter, and the whole world knows that even Lindsey Graham acknowledged that it was a loser last night. That was joyful. There are more fun exchanges like that I'll be talking about on the next level. So go and check out that feed if you haven't on whatever your podcast app is of choice. Today, life is good. More work left to do. Going to be a close election. But man, that was a beaten puppy last night. As my friend Michael Steele said on MSNBC After Dark, he got a spanking. He got a whooping last night. And, we got to take these little moments of joy when we can. So enjoy it. We'll be back tomorrow. I'll be coming at you from D.C. tomorrow because there's a hurricane in New Orleans, so I can't go home. Everything should be good. We're prepared. Sending good vibes to the Hubs and kiddo. I'll be FaceTiming with them, checking in. And we'll be with you on a podcast from D.C. tomorrow. We'll see y'all then. It's coconut time. Peace. And I pay my dues and I don't depend on nothing, on no one. I am a loner, all confused, waiting for the rainy day, while I spend my time walking in the sunshine. Swinging from the palm tree, cause I love coconuts, I'm drinking coconut kiss, and you don't get to know me.
Podcast is produced by Katie Cooper with audio engineering and editing by Jason Brown.
You have 5 new messages.
Hey Carl, it's Jen from Finance. Could you submit your expenses this week?
Hey Carl, happy Friday. It's Jen, Finance. Just need those receipts today.
Me again, Carl. Really need those receipts, like last week. Please just tell me where they are. Are you by your desk right now?
Finance teams, you shouldn't be chasing down Carl or anyone else. With Ramp, expenses are sent with a text and reminders happen automatically. Switch your business to ramp.com today and love finance again.